stress. And so there are a number of the rules of accent, and I thought we'd go over them tonight. And the deal is, in Machen's, there are six rules. I know all six. I may not be able to just list them off like that. I know them all six. It's the kind of thing that once you get into the language, you just automatically, you know what it is. So the first one has to do with the three accents, the acute, the circumflex, and the grave. And remember we talked about that? And just to remind you, this one, slanting like that from the lower left to the upper right, is called the acute. And then the one that is a little semicircle, also appearing as a little tilde. You sometimes find it either way. That's the circumflex. And then the one that slants from the upper left down to the lower right is the grave. Okay? This one can stand on any of the last three syllables of the word. This one can stand over the last two syllables of the word. This one can only stand over the last syllable of the word. All right? Now, another thing is that this circumflex can only stand over a long syllable. The circumflex can only stand over a long syllable. All right, then we get to some rules. If the ultima is long, the antepenult cannot be accented. And the penult, if accented at all, must have the acute. Doesn't that just grab you? Isn't that beautiful? No, I'll tell you, when I first read that in Machen's, and that was about 46 years ago, I had to wrestle with that. It's just funny. I can still remember the questions I had as I looked over that. All right. Let me see. I'm trying to think of a word here. All right, let's say lam bon ace. All right, now we divide that into syllables. This is the antepenult, remember? This is the penult, this is the ultima. Ultima meaning last. Penult meaning you hear the ult part of that? Well, see, that has to do with the ultima. So the penult means the one just before the ultima. And the antepenult means the one just before the penult. So that's the three are designated so that we can talk about them and everyone knows exactly which one we're talking about. Now, this rule of accent that I'm talking about says that if the ultima is long, so you look at that now and tell me, is this ultima long? In other words, is that diphthong in there long? Yes. All the diphthongs are long except oi and I if they're final. If they have an S following them, if they have a sigma after them, then they're going to be long too. So as a general rule, you can just say the diphthongs are long. So that means the ultima is long. If the ultima is long, the antepenult cannot be accented. Okay? And the penult, if accented at all, and I used to think, why say at all? Why? Because it could be the ultima accented. Isn't that brilliant? You know, you finally figure that out and you say, oh, I see now. So if the ultima is long, the antepenult cannot be accented, and the penult, if accented at all, must have the acute. So that's the rule. Now, as we work on verbs a little bit later, this will really come into play, and you'll be able to see that. You'll be able to see these. And for a little while, I'll kind of work on the accenting a little bit with you. But I was reading one of the later grammars, and he doesn't even emphasize the accents very much. He says that you don't really need the accents very much. So again, it's just, now to me, I'm glad I've studied the accents. And I would advise you to do so also. But still, it'd be hard to establish a case that says you have to have an intimate knowledge of the accenting to be able to read the Greek New Testament. I don't believe I could go that far. All right, now, let me erase this And we'll use a different one. All right, I'm going to use this one right here. All right, now this word means gift. Means gift. Now the next rule, fourth rule, if the ultima is short, a long penult, if accented at all, must have the circumflex. Now that's another one that I said. Why does he say if at all? Well, because if you've got a short ultima and you do happen to have an antepenult back here, then it could be accented on the antepenult. Are you following me? See, only if the ultima is long can the antepenult not be accented. If the ultima is short and you have an antepenult, it could be accented. So that's the reason why the rule says, if the ultima is short, a long penult, if accented at all, must have the circumflex. All right? And like I say, we will illustrate this more as we go along. All right? Now, I know that one of the rules is this, and it's maybe the very last one, and there's probably one of them that I'm not even remembering right now, even though I know what it is. But here it is. Like this. Now that's not going to work. That's not going to work to illustrate what I need. So I thought of another one that will. This one is autophos, and that is the word for brother. And then we'll put our verb here, blepe, which is to see. So then what we're saying here is a brother sees. Now, this word here is accented on the last syllable. It is accented on the ultima. And so if it were just by itself, it would be accented like that. See, with the acute, with the acute. But if it is followed by another word without an intervening mark of punctuation, such as a comma or any other kind of punctuation, then you change that acute to a grave. All right, now then, I want everyone to repeat the rules. No, I know. It takes some time, but now in your matrons, you need to read and look at his illustrations and think about that. But like I say, as we work on this tonight, as we work on our verbs, we'll work on this some more. And hopefully it will, you'll come to understand it a little bit better. Now there's one more rule, and I can't remember which one it is that I've overlooked. There's one of them. We've talked about five of them. There are six, but we'll probably come to it just in the course of things. All right, so let's talk now about verbs, and we're going to start accumulating a vocabulary. Now there's no law against your learning any Greek word you want to learn. And I would advise you to start getting serious about learning words now. If you have the letters down, now it's time to start learning words. And you're going to need verbs, you're going to need nouns, and all the other parts of speech as well. One of the problems that people have in studying Greek is that they haven't studied any language, including English, very much. Enough to know what is a noun, what is a pronoun, what is an adjective, what is an adverb, what is a preposition, what is a conjunction, and things like that. A Greek has all of those, and as you study this grammar, you will have to deal with those things and make sure you know what they are. A verb is a word that describes an action or describes something that is going on. It can be could be a thought or a mental process, you know, something like that. So it's not just an action like somebody out running or walking, but it's something, it's describing something that either has happened or so on. Now, every verb has tense, voice, and mood. Now, the tense has to do with time. That's a simple way of putting it. Tense actually involves a lot more than that. But for right now, we'll say tense has to do with the time of the verb. Is it past tense? Is it present tense? Is it future tense? All right, so let's talk about the present tense, because that's the first one we're going to learn. So the present tense, and then the voice that we're going to learn is called indicative. And in the indicative, no, hold it, wrong. I know better than that. Let me go ahead and do the voice. The voice has to do with passive or active. Passive or active. Now, the voice has to do with, is the subject doing the action or is the action being done to the subject? So you've got active or passive. You also have a voice that's called the middle voice. And the middle voice has the idea of one doing something for himself or to himself. So what we're going to notice, what we're going to study first, is the active voice. So the present tense and the active voice. Okay? So the voice has to do with whether the subject is doing the acting or whether the subject is receiving the action. So tense, voice. Now, mood is where we need this indicative. The mood has to do with the kind of action being described. The indicative means that the verb is merely stating something, as opposed to, say, imperative. Now, I'm showing you these words, and I'm defining the words because you need to know what these words mean if you're going to study the grammar, you're going to study Greek, you're going to need to know these. And if you study German, if you study Spanish, if you study almost any other language, you're going to need to know something about these. Imperative means a command. All right? So imperative, that means command. So just note that, and we understand that. There is the subjunctive. That's another one. And the subjunctive is the idea of something that may be proposed, but it hasn't happened yet. A lot of the if ideas would use the subjunctive. So this is a mood. It has to do with the nature of the verb. What is the verb? Is it stating something? Is it commanding something? Is it indicating some condition that doesn't exist yet, that's being contemplated? So right now, see, don't worry about not knowing all that. Just be aware, this is what mood is. That's what mood has to do with. So what we're going to do in our verbs is we're going to start off with one of the easiest ones, and that is that one right there, present, active, indicative. All right, here we go. Here's the first one. Why don't we just kind of go alphabetically a little bit here? All right, now, lambda, alpha, mu, beta, alpha, nu, omega. I say that because sometimes my script is certainly not perfect. So, lambano. All right, now look. There's one other thing I've got to tell you about before we go on with the verb thing here. When we looked at those rules of accent a while ago, The general rules of accent only tell you how not to accent. They don't really tell you how to accent. For example, we have here a verb. Now, which syllable could we put an acute on this syllable here? Because this is long. If the ultima is long, the antipenult cannot be accented. Okay, good. All right, we settle that down. So if that can't be accented, could we accent this one? If we accent it, what should it be? It should be an acute. Because if the ultima is long, the antipenult cannot be accented, and the penult, if accented at all, must have the acute. But now then, do we accent here or do we accent here? Do we say lambano or do we say lambano? Could be either way. And if we said lambano, the circumflex can be over this one or this one. I mean, so far as the which syllable. So would we put an acute there or would we put a circumflex there? All right, here is the rule you need to help you out here. It's called the rule of verb accent, and it's a very simple rule. It is this, that when you are seeking to accent a verb like this, your goal is to shift that accent back as far as you can to the left. You want to shift that accent as far as the general rules will permit. So, ideally, we could say, okay, let's just shift it all the way back here to the antipenult. No, the long ultima says you can't do that. Well, then we got it settled. We don't have any choice. We already know. Since the verb says we shift it to the left as far as possible, if the ultima is long, the antipenult cannot be accented. The penult, if accented at all, must have the acute. There you go. So in verbs, we're trying to shift it as far to the left as we can. All right, now, in Machen's, he lists, I believe, 8 words. He has lambano and luo, lego and luo, and didasco and ginosco, and he has echo. Has 8 words. Do you see them there? Who has opened and would read for us? Can you read the 8 words there?
Nepho, ginosco, grafo, didasco, lambano, lego, luo, echo.
That's perfect. Excellent. That's perfect. All right, so lambano. All right, tell you what, Greg, start over again and just read me the first one there. Blepo, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So here we have, and remember, this is a verb. All right, blepo. Where does the accent go? It's a verb. Where are we trying to go with the accent? As far to the left as possible. If the ultima is long, the antipenult, we don't even have one. But if the penult is accented at all, it must have what? The acute. Blepo. All right, what's the next one? Ginosco?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, here we have ginosco. Gamma, iota, nu, omega, sigma, kappa, omega. All right, now here again, we've got 1, 2, 3 syllables. Ah. We have an antipenult, we have a penult, and we have an ultima. So where are we trying to go with the accent? If we could, all the way back here, can we do that? Because the ultima is long. Therefore, the antipenult cannot be accented. The penult, if accented at all, must have the acute. Ginosco. Now, this word means I receive. This means I see, and this means I know. So the basic idea, this means take, or receive. This one means to see. This one means to know. And just like in English, we have more words than just know. I know, I recognize. I understand, I perceive. So the Greek has different words also. All right, so ginosko, okay. The next one, grapho, is that it? Grapho, all right. So we have our gamma, our rho, alpha, phi, omega. Now, by now, we're beginning to see a pattern. In a verb, if you have two syllables, like you do here, what's the accent going to be? Exactly the same. We're going to have an acute right here. Grapho. So, in fact, you can see a pattern there. Even though this has three syllables, this has two, and this has two syllables. Where is the accent in every case? On the next to the last syllable in the verb when it ends in omega. Lambano, blepo, ginosko, grapho. Okay? All right. And I will go back and, like this one means to write, grapho, to write, graph, we get graph, you know. So, grapho, to write, I write. All right, this one over here is delta, yoda, delta, alpha, sigma, because I'm saying that because I know sometimes on the board I don't do the best job of writing it. So didasko. All right, now tell me, where are we going to accent didasko? On the antepenult, the penult, or the ultimate? Which one? On the penult. Second one from the end. Didasko. And this one means to teach. Didasko means to teach. All right?
Lego.
All right. Now, I probably told you this. But Brother Shrigley at Florida College has given me something to use to remember that. That has not failed in all these years. Lego means I say. So, in that style of his, he said, Lego I say. Do you get it? As if you were telling me, let me go. Lego I say. And I remembered it. That was good. Where do we accent this one? Ultima, penult. Which one? Which one, boys? The penult. What is it due to be? That's right. There you go. Lego. Lego means to say. And there are a lot of words for saying and speaking. Okay? All right. Here is the one that's going to be used as the model. For the just the normal verb, luo, and so it has this one is the penult, this one is the ultima. So what do we do with it? Where do we accent it? Penult or ultima? Penult. And what is it? An acute. Okay.
Echo.
Echo, and that's the last one, right?
Yes, sir.
Echo. Now, notice that because echo starts with a vowel, we have a breathing over it. Remember the breathings? This is a smooth breathing. The rough breathing would be curved in the opposite direction. So you have a smooth breathing, and what that tells you is that that is going to be eh, eh. Instead of he. Now, if it's over an alpha, it would be like ah or ha. That's the difference it makes. So, where do we accent this one? Same. Same. Over the penult, and it is an acute. Echo. Echo means I have. It means to have. Unfortunately, it doesn't have anything to do with the English echo. So, echo, I have. All right, look. Lambano, blepo, ginosko, grapho, didasko, lego, luo, echo. All right, let's try saying those. Make sure everybody can handle that all right. This one. Blepo. Genosko. Grafo. Right. Lego. Luo. Echo. All right. This one means I take. Now let me stop right here and explain something about this present tense. You will see in a lot of the grammar books it will say, I take, I am taking. It'll say, I take, comma, I am taking. So that the present tense in Greek can be used in many different ways, just like it's used in many different ways in English. And so if I said, I take something, then that means that, well, what does it mean? Like, for example, suppose I said, I take medicine. What do you judge that to mean? What do you judge take there to mean? Right. Not that I just take it today. And so this is referred to by different terms. Anything, and especially if it's like a habit or something that you do, it's called a nomic present. Well, I don't get too much into giving all these names because a lot of people get the idea that you go into a present tense and you can just nail which way that's used, you know. I don't believe it's all even been analyzed yet. There are people go way overboard trying to categorize all the different ways presents can be used when you have to use the context to tell. So you have to understand there's no little symbol or something that tells you that out of all the 15 different kinds of presents there are, this is the third one. You have to use the context to tell you. And that's the reason why somebody comes along and starts making an argument on some esoteric present use of the present tense and everything. It's as if they have proved that's the kind of present tense it is. They haven't. They may be right, but they may definitely not be right. So one thing I want you to understand is that when you're looking at a tense, the only way you can tell it is by the form of the word and the context. You look at the context to tell you how the tense, whatever tense that is used there. So I take medicine. All right, now think about this. Suppose I said, I am taking medicine. What would there be any difference at all in that?
Yes.
What would it mean?
It's the continuous action. It's progressive.
All right. Now, this would be the progressive present. And in this case, there's not a lot of difference. In some cases, it would perhaps suggest I'm complying with something somebody has told me to do. I am taking my medicine, as if to say, I've been told to do it, and I am doing it. But again, that's subjective stuff. And you have to use that kind of judgment when you're analyzing a statement in Greek. So, but for right now, let's say that it means I take or I am taking. And for right now, we'll translate it either way. And one of the points made, like a book that I will recommend that you get, not right now, because you're not ready for it yet, but it's called Burton's Tenses and Moods. And one of the things he says about the present is that you can have an assumption that it is talking, at least in the present indicative, it is talking about progressive, going on. I am. So, I am taking. So, but that's not a hard rule. That is not a hard rule. Just kind of use it as a rule of thumb here as you're getting into it. As you're getting into it.
Hmm? Does Greek have a progressive?
It does not have one that is, you know, by the form of the word. Because sometimes present is used even in a punctiliar sense. Punctiliar means a one-time thing, a one-point thing, one-point-in-time action. So, you have to go by the context. All right, so this one means I take or I am taking. It also means to receive. I receive. I am receiving. So you could say, and you could use it in the sense, I am taking men's houses. It could mean I am receiving gifts. Do you see the difference between I am taking men's houses and I am receiving gifts? One would suggest a more violent taking, the other the receiving of something being given. All right. Blepo, to see. I see. Yes.
The voice of the mood clue you on the difference in your last statement?
I don't remember what my last statement was.
I'm taking houses versus...
Okay. All right. The passive, you know, whether it was passive or active. But here, you just need to concentrate on the fact that this word has the variety of meaning. Either take something, it might be just a normal taking, might be a violent taking, or a receiving, and all of that. And so the word itself is what you need to look at there. And then the voice would be like, I am taking, or I am being taken. See? Blepo, I see. Genosko, I know. Now we get words like the Greek word gnosis, meaning knowledge. We have not only genosko, we have epignosko, with a prefix on it. And what that does is emphasize it. But for right now, genosko, that means to know. What does grapho mean? All right, everybody got that, didn't they? Grapho. Now, we think about words like didactic, teaching, didasko. And we're not learning it right now, but didaskalos is a teacher. So, didasko, to teach. Lego.
I say.
Yeah, you got it, Andrew. 50 years from now, you will say, I remember learning that. Luo. I destroy, I loose. That would be like I loose a bondservant. But it could also be I destroy. Now, I'm not sure, and it always intrigues me how you can get these seemingly remote concepts in the same word. And there are different explanations for that. In some languages, for example, Hebrew, it's because two different streams of language have come to bear on that same word. And from one stream we have this concept, from the other stream we have this concept, and they come together in that word. But here it may also be that some things, if you loosed, it would destroy it. Such as, take all the nails out of a house, or the pins out of a house, or anything like that, then you would destroy it. So, to loose or destroy, but it is not necessarily a negative word. To loose could be to loose a slave, you see, to free a slave or something like that. Echo, I have, to have. All right, drill time. What does this mean?
I see.
I write. I teach. To destroy. I destroy. I have. I take. I receive. Yeah. All right. That's good. All right. Now, has everyone got this? Now, if you have your matrons, it's in there. So you won't have to worry too much about it. And that's what I'm going to encourage you now to do. And at the end of this lesson on verbs, there are exercises. And what you need to do is to make it your goal. Now, we won't... every time I have to figure this up. Today's the 15th, isn't it? 15th. Yeah. Sunday's the 18th. Okay. We won't have it next Thursday. So I think that what we agreed on, we're going to skip two Thursdays. And the Thursday after New Year's is when we will try to get started again. Okay? All right. So try at that time to have those exercises done. And remember, do the Greek to English and do the English to Greek. And the English to Greek will be the most fun. All right, now let's take one of those words. This is called the stem of the verb. And we're going to have the endings. Now, we've seen one ending so far. and that's the O. So this is the stem. And we will put different stems on the same endings. That's one real great advantage you have. Once you learn the endings, you can stick them on to a tremendous number of verbs, and you have to learn the different stems, but you already know the ending, so that'll be easy. All right, so we have luo, luais, and then lua. Now, in each one of those, take a moment. The ultima in all three cases is what? So where's the accent going to go in all three cases? Pino. And what's it going to be? That's right. So, acute, acute, acute. This is the first person, the second person, and the third person, and this is the singular. Ilus. Now here's where English has just dropped the ball, so far as I'm concerned. And translations have dropped the ball. Because so many translations now do not distinguish between the singular you and the plural you. And you lose something. You lose something that in some places can be extremely important. So the only way to indicate it is to use the archaic forms of thou. Thou. I loose or destroy. Thou loosest or destroyest. And he looses or destroys. Now this one is he or she or it. You don't have to change the verb to show whether it's male or female or no gender at all. Neuter. Actually, technically that is a gender. But whether it's masculine, feminine, neuter, all of them are going to use this one right here. Lue, third person. Now, the reason why you would say, well, what about, can a neuter use luo? Well, if a neuter could say, I destroy, but most neuters can't do that. So, we don't, you know, that doesn't really enter into it very much. And if it is a feminine, well, a woman can say luo as well as a man. There's no distinction there. So, that's the reason it doesn't come into play on those first two. But on that third one, he, she, or it. Now, the plural, and it's going to be first, second, and third, but it's going to be plural. All right, we have this one, and I'm not saying it deliberately yet. Oh, wow, that's a terrible Yoda, so let's do it again. Oh, that's a great Yoda, isn't it? All right, that's going to be the best Yoda tonight. All right, now, these are verbs. And look, in all three of them, do we have an antipenult? Do we have antipenults there? Yeah. Do we have any short ultimas? We sure do. In fact, every one of the ultimas. If the ultima is short, well, a long penultimate accent at all must have a circumflex. But in the rule of verb accent, what are we trying to do? Shift it all the way back. Now, since we have a short ultima, can we accent the antipenult? Yes. And since it's a verb, that's what we have to do. Therefore, what accent goes over lu? Acute. So here we go. The acute there, the acute there, the acute there. Luamen, luate, luusi. Luo, luace, lue. Luamen, luate, luusi. I, thou, he, she, or it, we, ye, and they.
Bob, I'm disappointed.
How's that?
We're in the South. We can say you and
yeah, me. Yeah. Now, see, oh, yeah, I know that. And I've made the point. I have made the point that all over the country, various areas have devised a way of bringing out the fact, I mean the plural you. And we in the South have the best one, you know, y'all. And even Paul agrees with that, because often he'll say, you all. You know, I pray for you all, or something like that. So, but anyway, all right, let's pronounce these. Luo. Luis. Now, listen. It's not Luo, Luis, Lue. It's Luo, Luis, Lue. It's because some of you were not doing that. I have found that in a lot of people, they do not hear whether they're stressing the right syllable or not. Let's try it again. Luo, Luis, Lue, Luamin, Luate, Luusi. Right. Now, this wouldn't be Luusi, see? Luusi or Luete or Luamin. No, it's Luamin, Luate, Luusi. Now, pick the word out. Listen, first I'll give you a break. I'm going to point to it and you tell me whether it is I, thou, he, we, ye, or they. And we won't worry about the rest of it. We'll just work on recognizing the person and the number. Okay? We.
Thou.
They. He, she, or it. All right. Now then, pick the word that would say, ye destroy. Luete. The word that says, I destroy. Luo. She destroys. That's right, lue. They destroy. Luusi. Luusi.
About pronunciation, is there, is it called a glottal stop? Is that what it's called between the first and second syllable of the third person plural?
Well, which one?
Third person plural between the antepenult and the penult.
There's going to be one, because to say an O, you have something like that. Okay. But there's not one formally there. In pronouncing words that when you start off then typically, you know, that's what you've got there. But there's not one as such. There's not any special sign for one. All right, now let's try something here. To give myself a little more room, I'm going to erase these. And we're going to try this now. So we erase the stem of Luo. And here, you see, We are erasing the stem of Luo. Now we're going to take the word that means to write. So what is that word? All right, so I don't know if I can get my spacing to work out, but anyway, it's a good exercise here. Now, on the accenting, remember every ultima is long. So what's going to be accented over here? The penult. And what's going to be on it? That's right. Over here, since we have a short ultima in all three cases, then where will this be accented? Over the antepenult. What will it be? An acute. And this is graphemin. I know that is in that. That's terrible. Gamma, rho, alpha, phi. Maybe I can just try again on that one. So let me try again on that one. It's really hard for me down this low on the board. That's a little bit better. Okay, so here's the accent. Okay. Now, don't you see, you already know this is the I, thou, he, she, or it, we, ye, they. Right? You know that. So, I could point to one now. You tell me what it means. All right, this one right here. Right. Correct. Now, you get the picture. You see that? Now, you need to know that. You need to know. O-A-S-A, amen, eti, usi. O-A-S-A, amen, eti, usi. And then you can take any verb like this. Now, there are some other verbs that will not be quite this simple. But there's a great number of them that are going to be just this simple. You see what I'm talking about when I say the stem as opposed to the ending? The ending remains. Do you see that, Elizabeth? See the ending? See, I'm not doing anything to them, am I? See that? All right, so let's take another word. What about echo? What does echo mean? I have. And let me see, all right. Because I get to having fun and I don't notice the time. Oh, is that a key or a kappa? Huh? Yeah, it's a key. Well, this is fun, isn't it? Now, since this is a vowel, what's it got to have over it?
Breathing.
As a breathing. And it's going to be a smooth breathing. A smooth breathing. Now, I'm just doing this mass production style. If you were writing it, you would not do all six, you know. But it's just easy now to do that. And where do I accent these? First, second, third person singular. Where do I accent them? All of them here. And what kind will it be, David?
Acute.
Acute. There's one. There's one. There's one. And then over here, since we have the... That's interesting, isn't it? Since we have the ekman here, ultima, penult. Since the ultima is short, where will the accent go here? It'll go here, right? So that in every case, in every situation here, the accent is over the ek. And that's because this is a two-syllable verb. Echo, ekes, eke. Ekamen, ekate, ekusi. You can kind of get into that. Set it to music. All right, so which one means ye have? He has. We have. Now, let me explain that in English, when we say we have, we might use we have come together. Echo has nothing to do with that have. Echo has to do with having something in the sense of possession. I have it. Whereas in English, we have come together. Have is just a helping verb. That's all it is. It's called a present perfect. And so it's the helping verb. We have come together. All right, so what you need to do now is look there in Machen's. And let me just make sure. Let's see. Did I have... Yeah, there's my book. Hand me my book there, please. So I want to show you now. And let's see, Greg, do you all have, you have one?
Yes, sir.
You have one? All right, so do you have, you don't have one yet, do you, Andrew? All right, we need to be sure that you do get one, and we're finding where they can be gotten cheaply. Let's see, who was it? Got one today, told me. All right, and you found that it was used and got it for $16. All right.
Yeah, plus $4 shipping.
Okay, shipping. Yeah, okay. are at on page 20 in the grammar. Now, if you have one that's a little bit different edition, and I know that some have been done a little differently, it's lesson 3 on the present active indicative. Now, you know, make note of this. And you need to study that. And let me tell you what not to pay attention to. Won't that be handy? Like on page 21, where it's right here in the middle of the page where it says the primary personal endings, don't pay attention to that. Just don't pay any attention to that. You won't need that. So don't worry about that. Just don't pay any attention. Now, you can read it. It's free if you want to read it. Fine. But it's not really important. I think it just confuses at this point. All right, now on page 22, page 22, do those exercises. And what that means is, number 1, blepes. And you need to put, now you need to put blepes and then put a little dash and put what the English is, or you can just put the English. So if you were going to do that, blepes, what would that be? Thou seest. Genoskes. Thou knowest. Lambanes. Thou what? Thou takest or thou receivest. All right. Number 2, graphe would be he writes, eke, he has, and lege. All right. Do you see now what we're talking about? Now look at the English to Greek. That's Roman numeral 2. Now don't get confused when he says like, we are knowing. Use this. What's the word for know? Now, put it to here. We are knowing would be what? Genoskamen. Okay? Genoskamen. So that's what you'd put there. We see. Blepamen. We are seeing. Blepamen. Excellent. And then number 2, they are loosing. They are loosing. Luusi. They loose. Still, it's loosey. He looses. Lue. Very good. Number 3, he is loosing. Still lue. Ye have. Ekete. Thou knowest. Genoskes. All right, so I've kind of gone over that with you, but now you need to work on that. Work on your verbs, and any other verb that you want to just go ahead and add to your vocabulary, that'd be good. Just start working on it. There are word lists that will be good, and so as we go along, I'll show you some of those. In fact, Tracy, will you look down there on about the second shelf or so, second, maybe even the bottom shelf right there in the middle, and do you see one that says New Testament word list? It's a fairly thin book. Do you see one there? Okay. It might be on the second or third shelf, I'm not sure. Okay. It says New Testament, yeah. How about passing that up or something? I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. All right. New Testament word lists. The thing about this is that in the back, it will have a list of the words like basic New Testament vocabulary. This checklist contains all the words used 10 or more times in the New Testament. So, on this one, it's good to have it and just, now it doesn't give any definitions. But later on, as you begin to accumulate vocabulary, this is an excellent thing to use to review your vocabulary and to augment your vocabulary. And you see, you need to know most of these words to really deal with the New Testament.
Is that book still in print?
I believe it is, but I'm not sure. This one's published by Eerdmans, and the thing about this one that is also so good is that then it takes all the books in the New Testament and it gives you word lists to help you to know the words you particularly need to read that book.
What's the title of the book?
It's called New Testament Word Lists. And it's by Clinton Morrison and David, it's kind of messed up there, Barnes. David H. Barnes. Clinton Morrison and David H. Barnes, New Testament Word List. And whether you find this one or not, you know what the basic idea is. You can probably find another one if this one is not in print. But that's a good thing, too. You don't have to get it yet. I'm just wanting you to know about this kind of thing. Because it'll come in a lot handier after you've accumulated, a considerable little vocabulary. All right, so that's it for tonight. So I've enjoyed this very much, and I think you're very apt pupils. And the next lesson is going to be on some nouns. You know what we can do once we get some verbs and some nouns? Sentences. We can say stuff. And so it gets to be fun. It really does. It gets to be fun real quick. And one of the things you will develop a real appreciation for is the mind of anybody, whether it's, a lot of the languages today are like this, how they can choose the right verb form out of a whole bunch and the right form of the nouns and all of that and put it together and talk faster than you can run. That's amazing. And so it'll actually give you the opportunity to do that mentally, and it's really fun to do that because we don't get to do that in English. And so I believe you will enjoy that. It's like mental gymnastics, and it's fun. Okay.